I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, roamingoz.com.au.
Hi Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, we're in Yarralla.
Yes, we are. And did you know I actually lived there when I was about 2 years old?
Wow. 2 years old?
Yes, and you the house is still standing.
The house is still standing, but boy, wouldn't the town have changed. You would have seen some changes when we were there.
Can't actually remember,
sorry. You can't remember, no, I wouldn't have thought so either. Well, I love Yarralla. It's a beautiful little country town. It's really quaint, and one of the things I love most about Yarralla is the history. I really love the Captain Thunderbolt story.
Right, okay.
So I'm going to tell the listeners a little bit about the township of Yarralla, and then straight after that...
We're going to be going to McCrossan's Mill and we're going to be speaking to Kent.
That's a really interesting place.
Yes, it is.
And they've even got like...
Full of history.
History, yeah, and some original stuff there.
And also the paintings of the Last Stand with Captain Thunderbolt.
And it's a fantastic place, McCrossan's Mill. And straight after that...
We're catching up with David and Martina.
We are. We're going to catch up with them again and find out where they are on their big lap around Australia.
Yeah.
Now, as well as all of these great talks and all this wonderful information, we've also got a great selection of music.
By the people we interview.
That's it, as selected by the people we interview. So what do you think, Lynn?
On with the show.
Well, listeners, I am going to tell you a little bit about the wonderful town of Yarralla. Now, Yarralla is one of my most favourite places. I've got so many, but I really do like... going to Yarralla. I've been there on several occasions. So much history, so many interesting things to see and do in that town. Now, for the benefit of the listeners, Yarralla is a town on the northern tablelands of New South Wales, and the town is located at the intersection of the New England Highway and Thunderbolt's Way. Now, they call it Thunderbolt's Way because Captain Thunderbolt. We'll get onto him a little bit later on. It's around about 460, 70 kilometres north of Sydney, so it's not that far. About 25, 30 kilometres, I guess, southwest of Armidale. So Yarralla boasts a rich history, okay? It really does. Yarralla has more than 50 buildings and sites of heritage significance, which can easily be explored on foot or by vehicle. Now, the community collectively bought and restored McCrossan's Mill in the 1980s and 90s, and this is now the multi-award-winning museum, gallery and function centre, and it is still run by volunteers. Now, there's also a starting point for the heritage walk. Now, the word Yarralla was taken by European squatters from the language of the local Anawan tribe of Indigenous Australians. Yarralla's described, a meeting place, or more especially a ceremonial meeting place and a lookout on the hill. Now, Samuel McCrossan, an Irishman, and his family and seven children first came to Yarralla in 1839, where they camped on the creek there. They returned to Morpeth, and then again returned to Yarralla in 1841 to finally settle there. Now, in the 1830s and 40s, the land was occupied by squatters who had moved north beyond the limits of the settlement. Now, the squatters were attracted by the prime sheep grazing land of the New England tableland, and some of these squatters' runs were Kentucky, Gostwick, Balala, Yarrowick, Meehy Creek, Terrible Vale and Salisbury Court. Now, some of these station buildings, including Balala and Gostwick Chapel, have been placed on the Register of the National Estate. They're absolutely fantastic, and if you love your old buildings, you've really got to go and have a look at these, okay? Now, some of the land occupied by these squatters also were made available to smaller farmers after passing of the Robertson Lands Act back in the 1800s. Look, there are so many interesting things to see and do in the Yarralla area, okay? And some of these heritage-listed things, you really, really, if you're in the area, if you're staying for a day or two, you really should go and check them out, okay? There's the New England Brass and Iron Lace Foundry, the Yarralla Railway Station. Now, these are all heritage-listed, okay? McCrossan's Mill. Now, we're going to be chatting with Kent Mayo a little bit later on, and he's from the McCrossinson's Mill. Captain Thunderbolt's Grave, well worth a look. The Blanche's Royal Oak Inn, and also the Captain Thunderbolt's Rock. Okay, now I've got to tell you, I was really disappointed when I went and saw the Rock because it's heritage listed. The local kids have just absolutely blanketed the whole thing with graffiti, and really disappointing. But as I said, it is heritage listed. There's a picnic area there. It's a tourist attraction, really, adjacent to the New England Highway in Yooralla. What else can I tell you? It's also known as Split Rock and Big Rock. Now, it's also good to note that at Split Rock, on the 27th of October 1863, less than 3 months after escaping from Cockatoo Island, Fred Ward, a.k.a. Captain Thunderbolt, and Fred Britton laid in wait for the mail at Split Rock, okay? Now, due to the increase in bush ranging, a police escort accompanied the mail to Yooralla, and the bush rangers were surprised by Sergeant Stephen Gardner and Senior Constable Reynolds. Now, a shootout took place, okay, with bush rangers escaping through the boggy ground of Church Gully, which, of course, is south of Thunderbolt's Rock. Now, during the escape, Fred Ward, or Captain Thunderbolt, was shot through the back of the left knee and was given medical assistance by a team of Saltpit men who confirmed the injury. Now, differing accounts were provided, okay, as to who actually shot Fred or Captain Thunderbolt, Granger or Reynolds. Now, 7 years later, Split Rock was to provide the first setting for Thunderbolt's last hold-up and final day. One afternoon on the 25th of May, Thunderbolt met the Blanches at Split Rock, robbed them, and then accompanied the pair back to their inn. Thunderbolt's Rock provides an excellent vantage point to survey the surrounding countryside, and in bushranging career of Fred Ward, again I keep saying, a.k.a. Captain Thunderbolt, it is in the vicinity of many of the robberies. Okay, it's also known when the name of the site was changed from Split Rock to Thunderbolt's Rock, but this change reflects the connection to the site of Captain Thunderbolt. Yes, it does. Now, if you think I'm a bit obsessed with Captain Thunderbolt, I am, and I'm also very obsessed with Ned Kelly, okay? I do love my Australian history. Of course, Ned Kelly is from, I guess, Glenrowan. It's probably the most famous place for good old Ned. Now, other things to see and do in Yooralla, of course. The best thing to do is to go to the Yooralla Visitor Information Centre, okay? That's always your best start. They're going to tell you things to see and do. I can tell you, you've got the Sunhill Dairy Goats. You've got Woodridge Reception and Fossicking Area. You've got the Big Soldier, Thunderbolt's Grave. I already mentioned him before. Alma Park, Thunderbolt Statue. What else do we have? The New England Brewing Co. And the list goes on. The Sweet Place. Oh, my goodness. If you're into sweets, you've got to go to The Sweet Place. Burnett's Books. There is so many things in Yooralla. People think it's just this little tiny country town, which it is, but there are still a heap of things to see and do in that place, okay, which is one of the reasons why I keep returning time and time again. All right, listeners, I am going to play you a song now. And I hope you enjoy it, okay? So stick around for after this track. You're going to get more of Roman Oz.
West of Yooralla in wild mountain ranges, where frost devils swaddle the landscape in white, where long grasses wilt in the cold autumn changes, and wood fires at evening and homesteads burn bright, where sunrise breaks red like a wound that is bleeding, the hills of New England lie misty and dim. By the highway where modern day vehicles are speeding, thunderbolts look out, res rugged and grim. Bush ranger bold like a hawk in its eyrie, scanning the road for the mounted pursuit, cynically watching for police tired and weary, seeking the mail coach in search of its loot, plundering while baffled the troopers debated, easily evading the ambush they laid. swift to the cave where the dark woman waited after a foray successfully made. Where sunrise breaks red like a wound that is bleeding, the hills lie misty and dim. By the highway where modern day vehicles are speeding, thunderbolts look out, res rugged and grim. Was he a brave hero or scoundrel defiant, taking and heeding the pathway to crime? Kneeling to no god or devil suppliant, shot like a dog in the waterhole slime. Only a name now for history's researchers, living forever in legend and tale. Bushmen still claim on the old lookout perches, thunderbolt's ghost as the evening grows pale. Where sunrise breaks red like a wound that is bleeding, the hills lie misty and dim. By the highway where modern day vehicles are speeding, thunderbolts look out, res rugged and grim.
Oh, hello, listeners. Welcome back. My name is Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz, and I am at Yarralla at the McCrossan's Mill Museum with Kent Mayer, and he is the museum director. How are you today, Kent?
Very well, Phil. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. Now, tell us a few things about this fabulous museum of yours.
Well, I should go back to where it started, which was in 1979, when this whole precinct of buildings was derelict.
Okay.
The company that used them for storage, for hardware and what have you, had closed, so the buildings were all derelict, quite decayed, and there was talk in town of demolishing them. Well, there were a group of newcomers who'd come to Yarralla who thought that wasn't really the brightest idea, so we decided one Sunday afternoon at 14 minutes past four, okay. We said, we'll buy this lot. And so we formed a committee up at the top pub, an informal committee, and the resolution was set that we would proceed with that rather rash decision. So then we formed an historical society, which probably wasn't the right word for it. We should have called ourselves a museum society. And by a fluke, we fluked the services of a visionary Sydney architect called Peter Myers, who was visiting here, and he saw something I'd written in the paper, and he volunteered himself to lead the project. Now, he was a very experienced architect from Sydney who'd worked on the Sydney Opera House with Utzon, actually, and done a lot of restoration work and worked with Indigenous people around Australia. And we followed him, and luckily we did because we were a bunch of rank amateurs. But we put all the labour into this place, and in the end we restored the buildings.
Okay.
And then we decided we would have a museum. Well, that was always our first idea anyway. But the buildings are our first exhibit. They are all professionally restored. They're all beautiful. They are now on the New South Wales State Heritage Register, uh-huh. When they could have been a pile of rubble in 1980. So the first exhibit here, Phil, is the buildings. Everything else is just contained in the building, but everything must respect the buildings. So when we started, we had no artefacts, which is a pretty unusual thing for a country museum, but we were lucky because in those days, folk museums were all the rage.
Okay.
And every town was building a folk museum, and good on them. And in fact, folk history was becoming a new thing all around the world with folk songs and folk music and folk stories. It was all lovely and legends being reborn. But we never wanted to be a folk museum because some of them are so dead boring that you never get repeat visitation. You've seen one, you've seen them all. As a joke, we used to call them flat iron museums.
Okay, right.
And we only ever had one flat iron, and that was a doorstop. And as a matter of fact, that disappeared one day because we do lots of conferences here, and there was a big regional Red Cross conference here one Sunday. on one Saturday, I forget, and at the end of the day, the flat iron doorstop was gone. So one of those ladies hiked off down the road with our flat iron in her handbag, which I think is hilarious. Anyway, we never wanted to be a folk museum, or as we call them, flat iron museum. There's a place for them,
right?
But we never wanted to be one of them. But we respect them. They've got their place. So we wanted our museum to be different. Now, a lot of us had been involved with our big theatre company here, and therefore we were very passionate people, outgoing and all that sort of stuff. So we wanted to adopt a policy of empathy. That means your exhibitions have to touch the visitor's heart or their head to make them think, to make them cry, to make them laugh even.
Uh-huh.
There are only two museums in the whole wide world that sit with a sense of humour, and Macrossan's Mill is one of them. The other one with a sense of humour is the Vatican Museum. And what's funny there is what the bloody hells are doing there, because I could never figure that out. That's a bit of a rough joke, I know.
Okay, that's fine.
I said that to a visiting coach group from North Sydney one day, then I realised they were the Catholic Women's Club of North Sydney. I said, oh, what have I said? And this woman sitting in the front row grabbed me by the wrist and she said, yes, you're right, Kent. They should sell off all that stuff and give it to the poor in Brazil. So I knew I'd had a win.
Fantastic. Now, tell us about some of the things that are actually in your museum. I know you've got some stuff up there with Captain Thunderbolt, and you've also got the Chinese exhibit from the Goldfields. Tell us a bit about that.
I will. Well, our first exhibition we ever staged, it was in 1982, and it was called Thunderbolt Life and Legend, obviously because Thunderbolt, Rowallah used to live on the legend of Thunderbolt. It's the only town in Australia that's got a statue of a criminal on the corner, and that's Rowallah,
yep,
you know.
Yep.
I mean, there's plenty of scope for that in Sydney, but it's just odd that we've got one. And but when I first moved to Rowallah, I thought that's a pretty weird thing for people to actually worship a bushranger, but they don't. But what's important to remember is that was a significant part of Australian colonial history, the lawlessness of it,
absolutely,
where people didn't respect the law and they had damn good reason not to.
Uh-huh.
So our first exhibition was Thunderbolt Life and Legend, more or less because we were compelled to do it. Then what we've discovered here, Phil, is that we are very positive people here, and I don't really believe in coincidences. I believe that if you're positive and you're genuine and passionate, things come together. So by the weirdest fluke, we found this incredible collection of Chinese artefacts in a town, not in Yarralla, but a little way from here.
Right.
But it originally came from Rocky River Goldfields, this incredible collection of Chinese artefacts. It's of national significance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the day we saw it, we bought it all that night with a cheque that wasn't even ours, true story.
Okay.
But it was all sorted out the next day. And the next day, a truck went out and we got the lot. And now it's here forever.
Yes.
And it is of national significance. We also discovered how at Yarralla Cemetery, a desecrated gravestone, a beautiful marble obelisk that had been vandalised, pushed over. And it belonged to Edward Trickett, Australia's first ever international sporting champion,
okay,
who won the World Sculling Championship on the River Thames in 1876, when he defeated the English champion Henry Sadler, Joseph Henry Sadler. Now that was that Trickett is number one in Australia's Sporting Hall of Fame. But long after he retired, he came to Yarralla to visit his son, who had a store here. And at that stage, he became obsessed with gold mining, mm-hmm, and he decided to help his son sink a gold shaft up the road here. And that late in the afternoon, it collapsed on him, and he died that night, with the result that he's buried in Yarralla. He's got no relationship to Yarralla rowing, because we're 1,000 metres above sea level for a start.
Right.
But the story is of international significance. And I actually tracked down the trophy he won on that day in 1876. Mm-hmm. It took me 3 years to get it from a shyster in Melbourne, but I got it. And now it's upstairs in Yarralla. And that is the most important artefact in Australia's whole sporting history.
Okay.
Another wonderful collection turned up, boarded up in a fireplace. And there were two tin trunks in the fireplace, one inside the other. And the tin trunk was all covered with soot. And we pulled it out. And inside that tin trunk was another trunk in pristine condition. And in that were all these artefacts relating to the family called Stoker, who originally owned the building. Artefacts from 1866 to 1951, including the personal effects of their young boy, Cecil Stoker, who was killed in action in France. And I read all that on that rainy June night at home in my house and cried myself to sleep. I felt that I knew that bloke. I felt like he was my little brother. In fact, some years later, when my family went to France, we went out of our way to find that fellow's grave, and I picked the red rose from his grave, much to my daughter's chagrin. Dad, you can't... Be quiet, Emily. Dad, you can't... Emily. I took it. And now it's a feature of the exhibition upstairs, which is called A Dark Red Rose, Cecil Stoker's Story. And that exhibition makes people weep because they just see the effect on a township of one man's death. One out of 68 young men in your house, 68, who were killed in that conflict. There are other unusual things in this museum. We have the lovely fire engines, which families and kids especially just love because they're such beautiful things, and lots of other one-off pieces. The whole museum is full of separate stories. It's a whole series of stories that people can relate to, or the exhibitions actually relate to people. People say, oh, this museum's got personality. They say it's different to any other they've been to, and that is because, Phil, we adopted the policy of empathy, that you must, your words and your artefacts must mean something.
Mm-hmm.
It's no point just saying, having a museum full of magnificent silver pieces stuff, if it doesn't affect your heart or your head.
Mm-hmm.
We also got a bit daring with an exhibition called It's Just Not Cricket.
Yes.
Now, that was my fault. I couldn't resist. Because having spent so many years being involved with museology, you meet some people who are just so strict about the rules of curation and how it should be and all this sort of stuff. They lose the plot.
Okay.
And they take all this, the sense of love or feeling out of a museum. So I decided to put this exhibition that took the mickey out of cricket for a start,
right,
and took the mickey out of museums, because it just makes a joke of cricket and of museums. But it's not disrespectful. People get it because it's in a corner by itself away from...
Yep, we saw that up there.
So it's cheeky as hell, but it doesn't ruin the integrity of the whole place. And people just love that.
Okay. So it's pretty amazing. That got that cricket. Well, you're talking about the cricketer. He's supposed to be the best cricketer in the world.
Well, no, he was the best batsman in the world.
Best batsman, yep.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The contrast between that silly exhibition called It's Just Not Cricket and the most recent one we've opened is called Sonny Jim Mackay of Yooralla,
yes,
the best batsman in the world.
Right, yep.
Because in 1906, way back then, he was the best batsman in the world and he came from here, Yooralla. And no one really knew his story till we unearthed it, thanks to a Sydney journalist called Philip Derriman, who wrote a book about the New South Wales Cricket Association and unearthed Sonny Jim's story. And it is just phenomenal. His scoring was better than Bradman's when he was a young man. His average for New South Wales, wait for it, is 112.75. Now, no other New South Wales batsman even approaches that, and never will. Even Bradman never averaged over 100 for his state, but Sonny Jim Mackay did. But unfortunately, he was knocked down by a motorcycle in South Africa lost his great gift because his eyesight was good.
Yeah.
But he never lost his character. He's still, you'd think he'd be bitter forever, which is why he was called Sonny Jim, because...
Jim.
He never, ever let burdens get him down. Even when he failed from being on top of the world to just coming back to Yooralla as nothing in terms of cricket, he still had his head up and smiled. And I think that's a story worth telling if it encourages people to have that attitude, you know.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, too, before we finish up, Kent, you've got these magnificent paintings out the front that tells the death of Thunderbolt, doesn't it? There's about 9 of them, is that correct?
12,
yeah.
No, there's 9, you're right.
Okay.
They're painted by a fellow called Philip Pomeroy.
Okay.
And they are historically very accurate. That's the reason they're displayed here, because they do tell the story exactly as it should be told.
Okay.
And people just love that we have one lady who does a dramatic tour of them, and it's just so, coach groups are entranced by it. It's just such a, well, such an exciting story in the first place.
Yes.
Because there was a lot more to Thunderbolt the Bushranger than meets the eye, which is why he's not revered but sort of respected.
Mm-hmm.
Because despite the fact that he was a gun-toting criminal, there was a good side to him.
Right.
And that's what, I guess one of the reasons people come to Yarralla, overseas people come to Yarralla, to find out about bushrangers. They don't get it.
No.
Because wherever country you go to, apart from maybe America, walking around sticking a gun in people's face is a terrible thing to do.
Yes.
But here in Australia it happened. And they can't understand how come people thought that was rather acceptable. And they come to Yarralla fascinated. A lot of them also think a bushranger is like a park ranger and it works on conservation of forests. No. A bushranger is a totally different thing.
Yes. All right. Well, look, we're going to have to wind this up, Kent. You're a wealth of information and I'd love to keep asking you more and more questions. But, yes, you were going to say something?
I was just going to sing you one verse of Thunderbolt's favourite song.
Okay, do that, please.
Most people don't know. This was called Her Bright Smile Haunts Me Still.
Okay.
And it was taught to him by his Aboriginal girlfriend, Mary Ann Bug.
Uh-huh.
'Tis years since we met, and we may not meet again. I have struggled to forget, but the struggle was in vain. For her voice lives on the breeze, and her spirit comes at will. In the moonlight of the seas, her bright smile haunts me still.
All right, there you go, listeners. Now, I don't know if I need to play a song after that, Kent, but I think I should nonetheless.
They better play one where the bloke can sing, right?
Great sense of humour too, my friend. Now, do you have a favourite song or a favourite Australian band? I can play a song for you.
Well, I really love that song, We Are One. I know it's simple,
but yes,
it just says so much about who Australians really are. And as far as I'm concerned, it should be our national anthem. And for many people, I know it really is. That's how they feel about it. That's how I feel about it.
Okay. All right, listeners. Well, I'm going to play that for Kent. It's by The Seekers, We Are One. And if you are travelling through Yarralla, make sure you drop in to the McCrossan's Mill Museum. And we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that. Thank you so much, Kent.
You're very welcome, Phil. Nice to meet you.
And you too.
I came from the dream time, from the dusty red soil plains. I am the ancient heart, the keeper of the plain. I stood upon the rocky shores, I watched the tall ships come. For 40,000 years I've been the first Australian. I came upon the prison ship, bowed down by iron chains. I fought the land, endured the lash, and waited for the rains. I'm a settler, I'm a farmer's wife on a dry and barren run. A convict, then a free man, I became Australian.
The daughter of a digger who sold the mother load. The girl became a woman on the long and dusty road. I'm a child of the depression, I saw the good times come. I'm a bushy, I'm a bamber, I am Australian. We are one, but we are many, and from all the lands on earth we come. We'll share a dream,
sing with one voice. I am, you are, we are Australian.
I'm a teller of stories, I'm a singer of songs. I am Albert Namatjira, and I paint the ghostly gums. I'm Clancy on his horse, I'm Ned Kelly on the run. I'm the one who waltzed Matilda, I am Australian.
I'm the
hawk
wind from the desert, I'm the black soil on the plains, I'm the mountains and the valleys, I'm the drought and flooding rain. Rivers when they run, the spirit of this great land, I am Australian. We are one, but we are many, and from all the lands on earth we come, we'll share a dream and sing with one.
Kent, great song selection, my friend. I am Australian, or we are Australian, or we are one. Now, it's a popular Australian song. It was written in 1987 by Bruce Woodley of the Seekers and Debbie Newton of the Bushwhackers. Now, if you listen to those lyrics, you'd realise it was filled with many historic and cultural references, such as the Digger, Albert Namatjira and Ned Kelly, amongst others. Yeah, its popularity... it's allowed it to join the ranks of other patriotic songs considered as alternatives to the Australian National Anthem, which of course is Advance Australia Fair. Now, if you heard the entire chat that we had with Kent, you were listening to it, he himself said that he would love to see that song become the next Australian National Anthem. It's commonly taught in primary schools. Now, in the years since the song's release, there have been calls for it to become Australia's national anthem, notably by former Victorian Premier Jeff Kennett, which was, I think, back in 2011. All right, listeners, I'm going to play you another song right now because we've mentioned Ned Kelly, and I said to you that one of the things I really love about some of these towns is the history. And Ned Kelly's another favourite one of mine. He's most recognised, I guess, Australian bushranger. So I'm going to play you a track by Red Gum, and it's called Poor Ned. And we'll be back with more Roman Oz, David and Martina, straight after this.
Poor Ned, you're better off dead. At least you'll get some peace of mind. You're right on the track, they're right on your back. Boy, they're gonna hang you high.
Kids at home and two still on the breast, they wouldn't even give a get some peace of mind. You're out on the track, they're right on your back. Boy, they're gonna hang you high.
Oh, well, there you go, listeners. What a fabulous song made famous by Red Gum. Poor Ned, you're better off dead. Now, Red Gum are an Australian, no, were an Australian folk and political music group. Now, they formed back in Adelaide of 1975 by their main singer, John Schumann, and Michael Atkinson, who was on guitars and vocals as well, okay? So, what a great song. I absolutely love Red Gum. Now, what I'm going to do now, straight away, is I'm going to catch up with David and Martina and find out what they did after they left Ellie Beach. So where did you head to after that, after the Whitsundays? Because I think our listeners are going to be jealous. too much
well,
talk of Whitsundays. Yep.
No. Yeah, I highly recommend it. Ellie Beach itself is beautiful. And then sailing around the islands, you know, like I highly recommend it to any of your listeners if they're in that area or traveling through.
Yes.
It certainly is a memorable experience.
And whole vibe around like Ellie Beach is really relaxing and, like, people are in a holiday mood, so everyone is just, like, smiling. And
it's a very nice, modern, friendly, modern town once you go through that main street. It's very modern. There's some very boutique-style cafes and restaurants, you know. But there's also, you know, the budget, more budget sort of style options, like the hostels are there and whatnot, which is still quite nice.
Yep.
Yeah, that's where we stayed, in one of the hostels there overnight, one night, and it was great. Met some lovely people there, but As usual, you know, time to go comes and
yes,
you have to sort of leave a beautiful place behind. Mm-hmm. So we slowly headed north, northwest, you know, from there.
Yes.
We travelled past Bowen. We sort of hightailed through the next couple of little towns and whatnot, you know, going through the beautiful cane fields there, actually. And a lot of the places, you know, they were burning the cane and whatnot. So it was there was a nice smell in the air, and you could see, you know, the smoke coming up from the cane fields and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got into Townsville. Now, Townsville, we sort of not that keen on the big cities, hey? We sort of doing this trip to really get off the beaten track and whatnot, but we certainly did check out Castle Hill. You really liked that one, didn't you?
Yeah,
the view.
Castle Hill was amazing. Like, I don't think so I've ever seen something like that before, because it was like big rock formation.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, people from Townsville, or I think not even from Townsville, but they like to climb that hill. Like, it's actually, I think, attraction for people to run the hill.
Yeah,
like up.
Four different tracks you can take, from like an intermediate to quite difficult, depending on your fitness level.
Yes.
You can certainly drive up there. We didn't know you could walk or run up, which we would have done, but we drove up there and we're seeing all these people walking, running, jogging, cycling, and doing all these sort of crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can certainly drive up, but if, you know, you're up for the bit of a challenge, yeah, you know, like Martina was saying, you can walk up, hike up, run up.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think I'll drive up.
You need to.
Yeah.
I'll drive up, David, Martina. I'll meet you at the top. Okay.
it is a big climb up, straight
yeah.
up. So it certainly would take it out of you. But the views from there were magnificent. You
yes.
know, you look straight over Magnetic Island, you know, mm-hmm. straight onto it, and you can see the entire Townsville and a 360-degree view from there. So
yes.
it gives you a good perspective of the whole area.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then where do we go from there? Because I understood you did some waterfall trip or something.
This was one of the big highlights, you know, that I've had jotted down.
Yes.
You know, because I did a bit of research before we started the trip and you know, looking on Instagram and Googling all these places. And there's a certain waterfall-style loop between Townsville and Cairns that you can do. Now, before we got to actually that one, there was a place called little tiny place. We actually got, again, local knowledge from a friend just out of Townsville. And this place was called Little Crystal Creek Falls. So it's maybe about 60 kilometres out of Townsville, heading for Innisfail.
Right.
On the left. Very highly recommend visiting. You know, there's a lot of families there, and it's like a three-tiered waterfall under a beautiful old stone bridge that was built over the creek about 100 plus years ago.
Yes.
And very, very nice for a good swim, you know, no fear of any crocodiles up there because, you know, you're high up in the mountains and whatnot. But the actual waterfalls, you know, started with Wallaman Falls, you know. And Wallaman Falls probably were one of the more impressive ones. It was the longest single drop waterfall in Australia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's magnificent. Yeah. Yeah.
We had to hike over there, so it was like half an hour hike or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah. You can view it from the top. So you can get a nice bird's eye view from the top.
Yes.
Or you can hike down, which is about half an hour, 40-minute hike down,
mm-hmm.
and to the base of the waterfall. Yep. And that was just impressive, to have a look at it from underneath.
And you go through the rainforest, which is nice as well.
Yeah, you walk down to the base of the waterfall through this magnificent rainforest, and we took some beautiful photos. You'd really walk past things, these mushrooms that were growing on the side of these ferns are fantastic. The colours were so vibrant out of it.
Yeah.
So that was a very impressive thing.
And so obviously something for the photographic enthusiast.
Absolutely, yeah. There was a lot to photograph from the waterfall to the walk down, from the base of the waterfall. But, there was just so many... the waterfalls that we saw, one just got better and better and better after another,
Mm-hmm.
Wallaman Falls was an impressive one to start off with.
Yep.
But then, once we got into the actual the waterfall loop, we saw Nandroya Falls, which were quite nice, smaller but quite nice.
Right.
Pepina Falls, they were only quite a small waterfall, but that was really nice to see.
Yes.
But the more impressive one, which probably your listeners would know of, is Mila Mila Falls.
Yeah.
And Mila Mila Falls, I think they were saying, are the most photographed, I think, in Australia.
Wow,
Mila Mila Falls.
And you can swim there as well. You can see, many people swimming in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the biggest attraction, from Cairns and Townsville to go to, and you can see a lot of tour buses. And they've actually created a little ramp so you can walk into the water hole down there.
Right,
so
yep.
No matter what your age is, you can walk in, have a great swim.
Mm-hmm.
And the waterfalls are very picturesque and great for photographs.
Yeah.
And what was there? Zilly Falls?
Yeah, Zilly Falls is another one.
And this one was probably your favourite, Martina, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like Windin Falls was really good as well because we had to hike probably for an hour or something like that.
Yep.
And it seemed like never ending walk, but at the end it was totally worth it because the view from there was amazing because the waterfall, we didn't go to the bottom of waterfall, but we went to the top of the waterfall.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
You could see this whole valley just in front of you. And it was great as well.
Yeah, so the hike leads you to the very top of the waterfall, top of the rock ledge. And then the waterfall falls off the rock ledge and drops about 80 or 90 meters straight down.
Wow. So is there plenty of water?
Oh, heaps of water, plenty of water coming through. So that, a lot of people, they get the photos inside the right on the edge as the water falls over, but there was so much water coming through when we were there.
Yes.
I thought, I don't know, I'm pretty adventurous and I like to get amongst those sort of things. But the way the water was coming over the edge, I thought, maybe give this one a miss.
Yeah. I think someone died there 3 weeks ago or something like that.
Really? Wow.
From the waterfall,
I didn't hear about
there
that.
Was some lady, I think, trying to take, the selfies and, I think she slipped and unfortunately, went off over the edge of the falls.
Yeah.
So that was in the back of our minds as well. And we thought, well, we're not going to risk it because they're fantastic. They're beautiful waterfalls, but there's no railing. There's nothing there, and you can really come unstuck pretty quickly in those sort of situations. And we were the only two there, so we thought, well, we'll take some adventurous looking photographs. But we won't get right near the edge.
Play it safe. Always best to play it safe.
Absolutely.
Send your drone out there. Send your drone out there, David, if you want to get something adventurous and. If it gets washed over, it gets washed over. You don't want it. We want to follow you until you get back to mainland, back to civilization.
Yeah. I've sent the drone over a couple of rivers and falls and whatever, and in one particular spot, I can't remember where it was. I backed it into a tree, and it was over a gorge. The drone's backed into a tree. I could hear it you know, buzzing and trying to sort of fly through. And because the screen went all funny, I didn't know which way to go. Do I go up, down, left, right, center, spin around? How do I fly out of this tree? And somehow I pushed something. I don't even know what I pushed. And it flew out of the tree. And I think the propellers were a bit scuffed on there and whatever. But
I think you were quite lucky.
Oh, yeah, I had the adrenaline going. I thought, oh, God, if it comes down where it was, we'd never find it. It was over a gorge and I was trying to take a photo of a waterfall. And yeah. And we've still got it, luckily.
Fantastic. That's important. We don't want to lose that drone because we want to get some really lovely photographs off your Instagram. What's your Instagram page, just for my listeners, if they want to start looking at your Instagram?
Yeah, absolutely. It's called uplifting.adventures.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a play on words because I used it as well when I was back home flying hot air balloons privately.
Yes.
So it's a bit of a play on words, you know, with the uplifting adventure side. But, yeah, certainly if your listeners want to jump on, that'd be great. We're sort of uploading photos and stories on there from the travel. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. So where are you going to be next time we chat, David? Any idea where do you think you might be?
Well, it's always changing. The plans are always changing, hey? I mean,
Come
across somebody and people say, let's go here, make sure you check out this and da-da-da. So I've got a really good friend of mine, Ross, that lives in Cairns, and he wants to take us up into the Daintree.
Yes, okay.
So we're going to drop in to see Ross. We're going to go through Atherton and Mareeba and have a bit of a look around Cairns, restock. You know, I need to do a service on the vehicle as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's actually another important thing. You know, you sort of got to mention people. You always got to keep in the back of your mind, you know, the vehicle also needs a bit of an upkit, a bit of TLC as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Need to do a service on that, which I do myself, you know, providing it's not anything major on the car. So we want to have a look at Karanda as well.
Yes.
Karanda, we want to have a look in the village up there.
A bit of hippie town.
Yeah, there. Sort of like a bit of a funky hippie looking town. You've got, I think, the Barron Falls up there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then slowly start making our way through Mareeba and north into Cooktown. We've got another friend in Cooktown that lives up there. He's got a beautiful property, I think about 150 acres, so we'll be staying with him for a couple of days.
Yeah, and his property is just right next to the famous Lions End Hotel.
Yeah, he's right next door to the Lions End Hotel, so it'd be great to stay there with him, and he's got some good stories, so we're looking forward to it. We've spoken to him on the phone a couple of times.
Okay.
And gets us a step closer to Cape York Peninsula again. Well, pretty much we'll be on Cape York almost.
Yep, Cape York Peninsula. Now, Johnny Williamson's got a great song all about the Cape York Peninsula. We might have to keep that in mind for when we talk to you about that. So have you got a song for us this week, guys? You know the routine now. I always ask for an Australian song at the end of the chat. Anything special you'd like me to play?
Well, look, I mean, considering Martina on the last episode of her bread making picked the Slim Dusty song, I mean, Slim Dusty's a fantastic, you know, brilliant artist, and he was an Australian and whatnot. I thought we'll stick to the same theme.
Okay.
You know, our car is essentially our home, and, you know, we're cooking and living and sleeping in it. So essentially it's like our swag. So it's like a mechanized swag. So I thought, what better song than Slim Dusty mechanized swaggy?
Absolutely fantastic. And I did say to my listeners, and they are starting to catch on there, David, that you are always trying to find songs that relate to where you are in your journey, in your adventure. I mean, the last one, you know, Paradise, when we were singing Run to Paradise, which of course you were in Paradise up in the Whitsundays, and Run to Paradise, and look, I'm sure
looking at the Australian music culture and everything in there, we won't run out of songs as we're driving around, around Australia. There's plenty to choose from.
Absolutely not. And as your adventures grow and grow and grow, so's your song selection. Because I do remember you saying Martina wasn't really a Slim Dusty person before you guys hit the road, but then all of a sudden you're driving past in one of our episodes. You were up there at Kempsey and you dropped into the Slim Dusty Museum, and now she's become a bit of a Slim Dusty fan, that lady of yours.
Correct, yeah. Look, I don't know whether it's been forced upon her because I've only got a small selection playlist that I've saved for offline use when we're not there. So she has no other option but to listen to the sort of a small selection that I've got in there. No, look, I mean, she actually really enjoys Slim Dusty, and she does enjoy a lot of the
Australian old school rock and whatnot, these sort of the old classics. So yep. It's really, really good, you know. We've got that great understanding and we've got a very similar taste in music. So I'll be curious to see what she picks next. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Out of the selection that she's created herself as well.
Well, I cannot wait for her next recipe, okay? When we were talking about the cooking segment, that was going to be so, so interesting. So, mate, the last one she did, you know, sourdough, absolutely brilliant. And I cannot wait until she tells us what she's going to be cooking on the next program.
Well, she's got some great things in the pipeline. She's already started making a bit of a list, but what else she can sort of run through. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
To look forward to.
All right, David. Well, look, I know you guys are busy having fun, okay, and making the mess of this trip. Somebody's got to do it, and you two guys are doing it in grand style, okay? And it's such an adventure. Thanks so much for keep touching base with us, and we look forward to chatting with you and finding out where you've been and what you've been doing in the next couple of weeks, okay?
Absolutely. So looking forward to it as well.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Stick around, listeners, for more of Roman Oz straight after Slim Dusty's Mechanized Swagman.
I'm a mechanized swaggy in a Kenworth T950. A whole big freight across the paddock to Perth. Me and my girl share the wheel and the berth. We can make it in 48 hours from Sydney. I used to like hearing my dad tell of the Depression, looking for work and getting knocked back. Shouldered his swag and took to the track. Remembers each camp and every good cook on the stations. But times have changed, old timer. The years have passed you by. Some things never alter at all. Let me tell you why. The dusty roads you tramped are now all highways. The road camp now a sleeper camp. The billy of tea, a quick coffee we grab. I live on the road, I'm the mechanized swaggy of this day. Let's go now. Yeah, things have changed, old timer. And yet they're still the same. The swaggy's old tradition lives on in the truckin' game. Cause I'm a mechanized swaggy in a Kenworth T950. Checking the gauges and the axle weights. Listening to the sound of the Jacob's brake. We live on the road with the mechanized swaggies of this day. Hey. I'm a mechanized swaggy in a Kenworth T950. I haul big freight across the paddock to Perth. Me and my girl share the wheel and the berth. We live on the road where the mechanized swaggies of this day. Hey!
Oh, well, there you go, listeners. That's our program for this afternoon. I do hope you enjoyed the interviews we had with those incredibly knowledgeable people and also those wonderful songs we played as requested by those people. A big congratulations to our RV Guard VIP card winner, a year's supply of Envirowash, which she got 2 weeks ago. Now, do make sure that you register your VIP cards, okay? RV Guard. We've got a 1 year supply of car wash going out every month, but you must register your cards. Follow us on Facebook to find out when the draws are, and check us out on our romanoz.com.au page. If you should miss any of the shows, you can get them there as a podcast. I'm going to play you one more song, and then that's it for us, guys. It's a number called I Can't Feel Those Chains Any Longer, which I think is very appropriate, since how we've been talking about Ned Kelly and Captain Thunderbolt. And then we're going to wind the show up.
I can't feel those chains any longer, can you? I'm footloose and free. I can't see the sense in red, white and blue. It's still Union Jack to me. We're drifting in the ocean alone now, like a beautiful ship at sea. And I can't feel those chains any longer. I love this big country, so I'll raise my glass to the diggers. Jump like a kangaroo, stare them in the eye like an emu. I'll always be true blue. Have you ever spoken to a gum tree? What am I trying to say to you? Love this place as half as much as I do, and you're a true blue too. Hey, I can't feel those chains any longer, can you? I'm footloose and free. I can't see the sense in red, white and blue. Still Union Jack to me. We're drifting in the ocean alone now, like a beautiful ship at sea. And I can't feel those chains any longer. I love this big country, so come on, let's get on with the shearing. Make a little wool and wine. There's no gold at the end of the rainbow, no fruit without the vine. We've got a big bed income, 'cause that's the way it has to be. Oh, there won't be enough to build a doghouse. Come on, sing the song with me. I'll raise my glass to the diggers. This place is half as much as I do, and you're a true blue too. Hey, glory to Australia, glory to the green and gold. We've come a long way since Botany Bay, and we're nearly 200 years old. Hey, glory to Australia, glory to the green.
You enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.